is October 5th. It's about 1:40, October 5th, 2005. My name is Janice Castro Reed, and I'm the student interviewer today. I'm interviewing Del Hayward, he likes to be called Del. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to, the topic of our conversation will be on the Tsimshian native foods, and I'll just be asking questions as far as food preparation, stuff like that. So first I'd like to get started by mentioning that in class you've talked a little bit about some of the foods that you grew up eating. We talked about the hooligan grease and then also salmon, different ways that it's prepared. And so I'm really interested in learning more about some of the other primary traditional Tsimshian foods that you ate growing up as a child and then that you might still eat today. How these foods are, how they're obtained, prepared, and preserved. So if you could share a little bit of this information with me today, I think one of the first questions, I know it's kind of a broad topic, so I've narrowed it down to asking, starting out with one of the main traditional food source, what would that be?
Salmon? Seafoods, I guess you want to categorize it.
Okay, would you put seafoods like shellfish and stuff together,
all
under seafood, right?
Right.
Okay. So salmon would be number one. Could we maybe just list some of them?
Well, you mean the different species?
Yeah.
King salmon. They call them corals back home, but most people call it silvers. It's one of the same. Chums, and another name for it is dog salmon. That's what we call it back home. And pinks, commercially, that's what they're called. We call them humpies back home. And sockeye, or commercially they're called reds. And that's my favorite fish.
The sockeye?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main fishes that we have.
Okay, and how about some of the shellfish
or other? Call, the one I like the best is the we call it the cockle. Cockle.
How would you spell that, do you?
C-O-C-K-L-E.
Okay.
And there's another one, but I just don't remember the name of it. It's a common, very common clam down there, and I just can't remember what it was called. Those are the two main ones that I'm familiar with.
As far as the shellfish go, then?
Yeah, right. And then we'll get over to the crab. They have Dungeness crab down there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's others, you know, because that's primarily the only ones that I'm familiar with down there. Now, they do have king, different, they call it king crab, but I don't think it's indigenous to that area.
Okay. Well, that's a great start. Okay, let's see. So for the salmon, all the different species of salmon, so when they were harvested, was it seasonally?
Mm-hmm.
And was it by each different species of salmon or just all of them?
They come down there, they come all together, and because and you'll catch them mixed. But the predominant salmon is the pinks. They're the ones that you catch the most of down there. And in the commercial world, they're the cheapest fish that you'll see on the market. And you go to a market store, that's the pinks are the cheapest. I personally don't care that much for the pinks, although I'll eat them. I like it when it's boiled and stuff like that. Other than anything frying or pickling or anything like that, I prefer the sockeye.
Mm-hmm.
The difference among the, you know, everybody has their preference. What else?
What month would you,
okay,
what month
it's
would
in
be
the
fishing
summer,
season?
Summer months, you know, July I think is when it starts, and then pretty much finished up for the season as far as salmon by September, the end of September. Middle of September.
Okay, so seasonally would be July through September for the salmon. Okay, so let's just stick to the salmon for just a little bit. So in class you talked about different fish camps that you would go to catch
mm-hmm.
fish. Would it be all the species of fish at each different camp?
Yeah, it'd be different. Although there are just like this hemlock, we catch mostly the chums there. Then there's another little camp we call Cane. It's not very far from it, close to that. It's located at a sockeye or red spawning stream. And that's where we get most of our sockeyes. There are other little ones. I don't even know the names of, but you know, there's little other little streams that with these predominantly sockeyes and pinks and dogs, depending on which stream you're in. But where we have these main camps, like that Tane and the Hemlock, those are the two that we, that our grandparents used to take us to all when we were kids.
Okay. So after fishing season's over, then I suppose, well, probably as you were fishing, they get into having to clean them and do all that. As far as, could you talk a little bit about the preserving of them?
Okay, most of the preservation is done when I was a boy, drying or canning or jarring. And all of these species are done in those three different ways. At these camps, we do mostly drying. That's when we do most of our drying.
And how did that process go?
Okay, when we butcher them, we'll take the internals out and then open the carcass up, you know, and almost like
lay it down the middle and spread it out?
Right, spread it out and just do it several times, like you have the back or split right down the middle, down to the skin, and leave it again, the skin intact, and then lay it out, that's the first cut.
Mm-hmm.
Then you cut down by the ribs, after it's open like that, cut down by the ribs on each side and pull that out.
Oh.
And it's still intact, so you got the ribs and the back, the belly to the backbone on the skin, and then the ribs on this side, and the other half of the ribs.
So it's all exposed?
Yeah, it comes out like that.
Hmm.
And then to get the strips off of there, you fillet off the main part of the meat is going to be on the skin, that's between the ribs. And it's folded, after it's folded out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll flay strips off of that till we leave about a quarter to half an inch of meat on the skin and stop it right there. And take those strips and dry them.
Wow.
Along with that. And you dry the skin with that little layer of meat on there.
A quarter of an inch?
Yeah, to a half an inch maybe.
Where would you place them?
You mean as we dry them?
Yeah.
Well, we have sticks 3 feet long, and then we'll drape them over the top of the sticks up with the skin wrapped over the the stick, exposing the meat to the outside. And then we'll put these blades that then took off of there, we call that eye walks, and then either pierce the strip and let them hang down, or drape them over these sticks as well. And,
pierce them and let them hang down?
Mm-hmm. What? From the sticks, yeah.
And what'd you call those again?
Eye walks.
Eye walk?
Eye walks.
How would you spell that?
I
watch.
I walk.
Huh.
Let me see the right on there.
That's interesting. So that would be the fillet strips? That's what you call that?
No.
No?
Oh yeah, the fillet strip. It's nothing but meat.
Uh-huh.
It's, it's shaved or stripped off of the meat when you have it. It's about that thick when you, before you start filleting it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll keep filleting layer after layer down until you remain with half an inch. You leave that to take these strips that you took off. There may be, I don't know, 5 or 6 strips that come off of there, off of each fish.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more, I don't know, I don't remember.
And that's what you call eye walk?
Yeah, it's in maybe 1/4 inch thick strips, and maybe 1.5 to 2 inch wide.
So would you compare that to, just for general purposes, to like beef jerky or something?
Yeah, would be along, when it's dry, it's like that. Yeah.
I see. And that's what you would call eye walks then?
Eye walks.
Huh. And so when you ate that, was that more like a snack food, or what part of a meal would that be?
A lot of that is, you eat beef jerky, it's not a meal, it's something like a snack.
Right.
And that's what I watch. Although it can be a complete meal, like you might have it with seaweed and or rice. On the side, and eat it that way, because we use a lot of rice back home.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too, yeah.
Okay,
so you would do all of that preparation of the drying mainly at the camps.
Right.
And then that food would, you would also can and jar salmon, that would be like dried salmon, and then you would also can.
Mm-hmm.
Can it, jar it? And
yeah,
would
we'll
do that?
Have to do that. Actually, that can be done at the camp as well, but most of the main part of the processing at the camp is drying.
Mm-hmm.
You need to set up to do it that way. It's just that it's easier to do it at home.
Uh-huh, the canning and the jarring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you just take that all home and get all that ready and use that for the rest of the year, your whole supply?
Yeah, we'll see. The canned and the jarred fish will be used all during the year. And the dried as well. I mean, it lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You can dry it all the way, 100%.
Okay, how about for the cockle and the crab, is that something that you would be able to preserve?
Yeah, you can jar and can this as well, but we don't normally. We'll catch them and cook them, and they're mainly boiled. That's about it. And you can eat them right out of the shell or steam them. Boil them up, because you just put them about that. It's a small amount of water in the bottom. It doesn't take very long to cook them, especially the crab. It's just a 15-minute maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to boil them while they're still alive. Putting them in hot water while they're still alive. It sounds cruel, but that's the only way I know. Because when they take them home after you catch them. We'll take them home and we'll boil them immediately as soon as we get them home, because they're still alive.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like they do lobster too,
yeah,
right? I've heard.
Right.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm wondering for those types of foods, would you store those for later? I mean, you have
well,
to eat them right
them.
Away?
You could freeze them.
But like long time
long
ago,
time
there's
ago
no freezer, right?
You eat them right then and there because they're available just about all year. And you
oh.
go down, you can go down and get them just about almost all year long.
Okay, so you wouldn't have to put those up for
no.
any reason.
There's okay. certain times of the year that they're eat in the wintertime.
Oh. That's interesting. Okay, let's see. So you talked about rice. That was another question that I had as far as my grandpa's from Guam, and so he always ate a lot of fish and rice foods and
potatoes.
A lot of potatoes too, huh? Wow. And so that's I guess that's the question I'm looking at is like in class you talked about Father Duncan what would be the first contact, the first exposure to the Tsimshian to let's say Western world type of food or not necessarily like white man food, but you know what I mean as far as foods that were not native to the Tsimshian people.
I would imagine there was a lot of white people in Canada and British Columbia, Canadians, and the cannery business is a big business, and a lot of them were run by the white people and just worked for them.
I saw a lot of photos with
yeah.
Looked like I think for in studying Tlingit and Haida where a lot of the workers in the canneries were Tlingit and Haida.
Right.
That same Tsimshian worked in the canneries too.
Then later on, I don't know why that evolved, but we started importing a lot of Orientals, Filipinos, and early on it was Chinese people and Japanese.
Uh huh.
Mainly, when I can remember as a young boy going down to the, we call them Filipino bunkhouses, man, they can cook. I mean, you used to go down there and bum off of them, you know.
Their food?
Just, yeah.
So do you suppose that's when you might have been introduced to rice then?
I grew up with it. And I mean, you know, it was always there.
Oh.
Cause, but, you know, it could have originated from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe during my grandparents and good grandparents' time. But, like I said, it was always there.
For
always
you, it's had, a natural yeah, part of your diet.
Right. Mm-hmm. And potatoes is another one.
So.
Because I love potatoes with grease.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you fry potatoes in hula grease?
Well, it can be fried, but usually it's boiled. And what we do is we just, after we boil them, we set them aside. You can eat them hot too, but we like it cold.
Oh.
After it's boiled.
The potato,
yeah.
And then you dip it in
dip
hula
grease? Dip it in, put a little salt on it and dip it in the grease.
Wow. And when you were a kid, you grew up eating that and you still
yeah.
eat it like that today?
Mm-hmm. I do. That was seaweed. No, there's nothing to discuss with seaweed. That comes in a particular part of the year. It's only available during that time. So when that, and it's short. The season for it is short. I'm talking a couple of weeks, 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so you got to plan your, and you have to, when you pick it, you have to wait for the tide to go way down to, we call it minus tides.
Minus tide?
Yeah, because the seaweed is good in the deeper waters, you know, where they're grown. And it's a certain kind of seaweed. It's not a, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of seaweeds.
I didn't
know
that.
And And you have to know how to identify this particular one. Because if you don't get the right one, because they all, a lot of them look similar, but there's always some little tiny defining feature on this particular one that you know how to spot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take the practice eye. You know, and I remember that grandparents and our parents say, this is the right thing. No, that's not right. You look at them, you know, they're the same. They look the same to me, you know, when I first seen them. But like I say, it takes a practice eye, you know, that's just like these people with mushrooms. I didn't touch a mushroom for anything.
Me neither.
You know, but I'll eat them with their empire in the store.
Star, right. So as far as learning how to pick the right seaweed, you say there's one particular seaweed that you would eat.
Yeah.
In learning how to harvest that seaweed, you would just learn from experience,
right,
in picking it.
Right.
But how did you know you picked the wrong one until you ate it?
Like I said, it's very subtle, differences between these similar looking seaweeds. This is like mushrooms. You know, all mushrooms look alike to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know they're different, but there's several other things like that. Not only seaweed, but some other, I can't remember. Something will come up between my memory. But you have that same situation, like, you know,
it's kind of like,
you know,
yeah.
Kind of
picking herbs, you know,
yeah.
You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you said it's a 2 to 3 week, it's a real short season. What time of year would that be?
It seemed like it was around May.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not that sure about it, but
you remember picking that as a kid when you were real young?
Yeah, summertime, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So all of your family, everybody just focus on that 3 weeks, nothing but seaweed?
You got to get out there and harvest all you can, because it doesn't take that long for that seaweed, once it starts growing and reaches a certain point, that it's no longer a value.
Oh.
You know, it gets overripe. You know, it starts looking funny, and then it's over. You know.
No good.
Yeah.
And then you would just use that all year round and help?
Yeah, you pick a lot of it, and it's plentiful. And everybody just fill up garbage bag, you know, black garbage bag, and then you put it either on big sheets of bed sheets,
mm-hmm,
and spread them out, or put them up on the roof, you know, so they'll sun dry.
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole, as you can see, a lot of places in the homes back home just covered with that, you know, on the roofs.
How long would that take to dry it?
Not very long, you know. And then one of the things we do after it dries that way, after it completely dries that way, then we'll bake some of it in the oven, and it'll get crispy. And what it reminds you is, you know, that you do that with bacon fat.
Pork rinds.
Pork rinds.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's one of the things, that one of the steps that takes it further into the processing.
So some you would leave dried, and some of it you would bake it. So you would have two different types to
eat. And there's other too, like a lot of people like it. They put them in a big mats, like a floor mat, like that thing, just stretch it out and rather a thin layer, and put it on the sheets, and the sheets, bed sheets, that we used to use.
And that's how they would dry it?
Yeah. And some of it would take and crush it all up after it's dry, and just, it would be just like, you took potato chips and just crush it all up.
How would you use it then?
Then we'd use it in that form. we can mix it with I like to mix it with rice. I like to eat it by itself. I like to dip it in grease. That's about it, I think. But then you eat those roasted kind, like potato chips.
Would you use it sort of like a spice or no?
No.
No. I'm just trying to take as many notes as I can.
Well, another one is salmon eggs.
Salmon eggs.
Now that can be either boiled, make it hard. You've seen salmon eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe a quarter inch in diameter, very large. We can either bake it in the oven, or you can fry it on top of the stove in a pan, or in grease, or we used to call it lard.
The hooligan grease, you would call it lard?
No.
Oh.
You know the one that comes in the can?
Oh, like the Crisco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, used to fry it in that.
The salmon eggs?
Yeah.
So when you fry these salmon eggs, would you put it in kind of like a patty, or there'd just be little salmon eggs all over?
Salmon eggs. You know how they're held together in the membrane?
Mm-hmm.
And you pull them out, it's just...
like a blob?
Yeah. You leave it in that state.
I see.
And it's remaining that state through the cooking and all. And then we'll take that and we'll mix that with rice and or seaweed. What else? And eat it by itself. Cooking these various forms I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is fish heads.
Fish heads?
Mm-hmm. I love fish heads.
My grandpa loved fish heads too. So any of the fish heads were open for eating then? How would you cook those?
You can bake them in the oven, or you can boil them. And those are the two favorite ways of doing it.
Would you preserve those?
You can. Today we freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a lot at home. I caught in the Yukon and down at the Chipmunk. I save a lot of those. Usually king salmon, because they're larger fish, the heads are bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a favorite.
Did you get the king salmon? They had to have ran. In Metlakatla, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah.
Right. Okay. They're an ocean fish.
Yeah. Let's see. So, when you were a kid, rice was easy to come by then?
It was plentiful. I mean, like I say, we bought a lot of it. I mentioned how we used to trade down. I don't know if you were around, I mentioned we used to trade with the farmers in Washington. We fished down there in the Puget Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a big stick truck out there with a can of the fish that we caught down there in Puget Sound and use that as a trade. Because the farmers like canned fish.
Mm-hmm.
You give them a case of canned fish and they all say, okay, take all the fruits and stuff like that were out. They already sold what they were going to sell in the market, but there's still a lot of product out there in the fields. And in most cases, they're overripe by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they weren't of any use to them commercially. So they just let us go out in the field and just load the trucks up. And we take them and start processing them right on the boats that we fished on down there.
Oh, the apples and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh.
Apples and peaches. And a jar of all of that before we had home. We took them home, they'd be spoiled. It's about a three-day trip, from Seattle to another town on those fishing boats.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 72-hour trip.
Wow. So you had plenty of time to put up some foods then,
right.
Huh?
Then we'd get meats, you know, in bulk, half a steer and things like that. 100-pound sacks of all these, you know, like rice and sugar and flour, and we'd stockpile up on that, and we'd all estimate how much it's going to take to go through the winter with all this stuff. You know, in addition to the stuff we grow at home, you know, that's all going to be our stash for the winter.
We'll have to get you through the entire year until the next season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of stuff would you grow at home?
Potatoes.
What kind of potatoes?
We like these little ones that are kind of a reddish purple. I don't know what they're called. But we grew a lot of those. They don't really get about that big.
Mm-hmm.
But we grew others as well, you know, like the thin skin one.
The Yukon, I think, are they yellow or white?
Well, they sell them in the market, so
mm-hmm. Real thin skin on them, though.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get real big like russet potatoes.
No.
Kind of like for stewing potatoes, potatoes.
Yeah.
So you actually probably had a good growing season down there because
right.
you didn't, it was nice and warm, right?
Right.
So you'd be able to garden?
Right.
All
a lot of stuff. I mean, carrots, turnips, radishes, kohlrabi.
What's that?
Kohlrabi.
Kohlrabi? I've never heard of that. What
it looks like a carrot.
Oh, really?
But it's orange, I mean, yellow.
Hmm.
It looks just like a carrot.
But it's yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So you would eat it, prepare it like you would a carrot?
Yeah.
Eat it fresh?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, for sure. Cooked. Gooseberries. And we had blueberries. I mentioned lavenberries. Huckleberries. They look like a blueberry, but they're reddish color, almost transparent. And it's mounds and mounds of salmon berries. They just grew everywhere. You'd step out the door of your house and there it is. And then the summer season.
So
all of this stuff is
this
summer, yeah.
So whose job, so to speak, was it to pick all the berries? Did the kids
everybody.
Do it and everybody
all,
did?
Yeah, all, mostly the women and kids.
So they spend their summers picking berries?
A lot, we process it right immediately, you know, either jarring or canning it. And we like to eat our berries with oregano grease.
And
the sugar in there.
And how would you put, like, in a bowl and have it kind of like a cold cereal is eaten, like, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Berries, grease, and sugar?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my
canned milk we used to put in there.
Canned milk, yeah. My grandfather, who's from Guam, he introduced us when we were kids to white rice, our breakfast. White rice,
mm-hmm.
blackberries, a little bit of sugar, and milk. Kind
yeah.
of sounds like something
right.
like
same
that.
Thing. Yeah.
Okay, so the berries jarred, canned, eat them fresh, and so how about dessert types of things, muffins, kind of
yeah,
like you see today.
We baked a lot. My grandparents and my mother, I remember them baking a lot. Like all these different things you mentioned, muffins, biscuits, loaf of breads, and all of that.
Breads and pies.
Pies, everything. Oh, another one I didn't mention was rhubarb.
Oh, rhubarb.
Rhubarb, because I love rhubarb pie.
Rhubarb, is that a vegetable or a fruit?
It's a fruit. it looks like a celery.
It grows
stalk.
Wild in Alaska, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And so
and
you would be able...
fast.
And that was, it grew there in Metlakatla?
Mm-hmm.
And so would you be able to, you could freeze that, jar it, can it, make pies, all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The seaweed is so interesting to me. What would a typical meal for you, let's say when you were 7 years old, what would a typical meal be for you if you sat down to eat, let's say, dinner?
Rice, and, you know, fish and or deer meat, gravy in a gravy form. We did a lot of chop suey type cooking.
Really?
Yeah. It was the vegetables and the meat. And
like a
stir
fry.
Oh, and a stew, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a stir fry.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's one thing I've read about in a few articles that I've found, was the deer, but it hasn't, deer meat, it hasn't been, we haven't talked about that much in class or...
Yeah, I love it as canned, and fresh, you know, fried, roasted, all the different forms they're used to today.
With beef?
Yeah, beef, mm-hmm. or beef stew, or soup, or...
So did you say dried? Like you would make deer jerky?
You know, I don't remember that happening.
Huh.
But it seemed like it should, and it's done up here with moose and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think it'd be a good way of processing.
Mm-hmm.
But as a child, I don't remember that.
Did you probably, is there moose down there?
No.
I didn't.
Oh, on the mainland.
Oh, really?
See, this is nothing but islands where we live, and so they're predominantly wolves and bears and deer on there. And deer being the favorite meat, wild meat.
Mm-hmm. How about the wolves or the bear?
You know, up here they eat bear. Like they eat moose and everything else, and I don't like it myself. Because
mm-hmm.
down there, since the main food the bears eat is fish, and that's their meat, and I have that fish taste.
Oh.
So a lot of, but up here it's different. They live on berries, they live on berries and stuff like that, but their main diet is fish down there. But up here it's different.
Oh.
They live off of other game, berries. And so they're not going to have that gamey, and probably why we don't eat bear meat down there. No, I've never heard of anybody eating wolves either.
Yeah, me neither. But I'd ask.
Maybe because they look like a dog and you don't eat dogs.
No. That would be kind of taboo. Okay, so let's see. What percent of the native foods would you say that you eat today that are included in your diet?
I would say 50%.
50%?
Uh-huh.
And in what form?
You know, the fish and the moose and the baked, I like baked salmon, fried salmon, smoked, jarred, pickled salmon. That's something that I really like, pickled salmon.
Pickled salmon, what's the difference between that and jarred salmon?
It's jarred, but it's in the raw form when you don't cook it. You just put the pickling in there and that cures it, or cooks it, I guess, and you just eat it, and that, it's actually raw, but you know, it's pickled, so it's like it's cooked, you know.
So you put it in the jar raw in its original form, but then you let it sit over a amount of time?
Yeah, it stays in there, and fact, I'm having some done right now by a friend of ours down in Minto. She knows, she got the recipe for it. And they put all these little seasonings in there, you know, these little seeds and pickles and, you know, everything in with it, you know. And bay leaves, what else? A lot of different kind of seasonings in there. And they just let us, oh, these little unground peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And the limes.
Mm-hmm.
They put all that in there, and then the vinegar.
And then you just jar it, and when you go to eat it, you just pop open the lid and eat it right out of the jar.
Right. And that's got to be, they say the shelf life on that is about 3-4 weeks, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you got to eat it right away, or most relatively soon.
Mm-hmm. So back to the part of the, as far as 50% of your diet, the fish, moose, baked salmon, baked, fried, smoked. How about other things? Like, what would you eat with it? Like, if you go home and eat dinner tonight, you have baked fish, and what would be the other
rice
things?
Rice is a favorite with any seafood, where I come from. Potatoes as well.
So the rice, just steamed white rice?
Yeah, steamed white rice. That's what I mean. I like it other ways too, you know, like the, what they have in restaurants nowadays, it's kind of yellow looking.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico, I call it.
Chicken broth.
Is that what it is?
I think it's chicken broth.
Yeah. And there's seasoning in there as well. You see the flakes of seasoning.
Maybe oregano or something. Mm-hmm. Let's see, oops. So out of all these foods we've been talking today, what would you say would be your favorite food that might, like something that would, when you eat it, it might bring back a childhood memory or something?
Fish.
Fish? Just it, any kind of fish?
Sockeye.
Sockeye. And do you ever go without it? Is there ever a time you don't have any in some form?
Not, well, I get it all, I fish for it in the summertime, make sure I have enough.
So you're never without.
I got 5 freezers of fish, moose, fish eggs, you know, the herring eggs, all different kinds of salmon.
Oh, we didn't talk about herring eggs. Those aren't the same as salmon eggs.
No,
those are different.
No, they're different. I love that too.
Are those seasonal?
Yeah, they come in just in a short period of time. In the where I come from, they're in April, I think.
So
not very, very long, but they just come in to spawn. The females will lay their eggs, and then the males will come on and fertilize them with their sperm. And the white sperm just makes the whole shoreline turn white.
Really?
Yeah.
So would that be an indicator of
when
to get them?
Right.
Oh.
But when that happens, they, you know, they try to commercially fish them before that happens. And the fish and game has to kind of gauge when that's going to happen. And they allow the fishermen to go in there and catch those fish before the spawning actually takes place. They'll let it start. As soon as it starts, they let the turn fishermen loose on it. And they'll catch what they can. See, they keep the eggs in the in the carcass and sell it all together. But when they And the egg content is only probably like 8 to 12, 14% of the body weight.
Oh.
And we sell it to the Japanese that way. And when they ship it over there to them, you know, that's the form it is. It's frozen in the carcass and all. And the Japanese process it over there, they strip out the eggs themselves.
And that's what they want it for?
That's
our
all
eggs?
They want out of it.
Oh. And how are those prepared?
We can eat it right off the beach. All over that right there. But I would say just a warming of it. If you want to heat it up. You heat up the water up to boiling and then you let it cool off. And you stick the sample in there every once in a while as it's cooling until that sample stops turning white. If it turns white, it's too hot.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that reaches that point, then you start putting bigger quantities in. And it cools down fast because the eggs themselves attract the heat.
Mm-hmm. And it cools the water down.
Cool ones, and you gotta elevate the temperature again and just try to keep it in that range.
How long do you keep them in the water?
15 seconds.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like blanching them or something like that.
Well, it's just enough to heat it up and then get it out.
And then you just
eat them right
with
out.
The spoon,
yeah.
Right out like that?
Well, they're normally on, there's different ways they harvest it. You can put evergreen trees out there and let the fish spawn on it. Or you could put kelp out there and you could put, rowan, you call it rowan kelp, herring rowan. And let them spawn on the beach, on the kelp, and you pick that kelp up after.
Oh.
Or if you wanted to put it on trees, and you anchor a tree down and sink it down, and then the herring will come and spawn on top of that. It could be anywhere from an inch, 2 inch thick of herring on that, on the branches.
Hmm.
And just peel them out.
So you can jar them, can them?
We eat them on this, they seem to last a long time. They're eaten virtually right away. I mean, there's no, you could freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays. And I imagine they could can them as well, but I don't remember anybody doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know they salt it, and they put it in wood state barrels. I remember them doing that, but they don't
just
see
until
that
they're
anymore.
All eaten.
Mm-hmm. The funny part is that, when you put it in salt brine, they're real salt. You just maybe 3 or 4 times put it in fresh water, and soak in the fresh water, and change the water, put them in fresh water. Do it about 3 times, and they're right back to the way they were when you first caught them.
Oh, really?
And all the salt is out of it. And you eat it just like that.
So that's a way of preserving them, then, is salting them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's interesting. Well, that's pretty neat. I've never even seen herring eggs before.
I've
seen. So, yeah. Okay, Del, it looks like our time is up.
Yeah.
This is great information. Thank you so much.
Yeah.